You are listening to the ForceCom Frontline, bringing you to our soldiers on the front lines of readiness. Hey everyone, welcome to the ForceCom Frontline. I'm Ashley and I'm your host. This is going to be the last episode of our season three and for the year for us. And for this episode, we decided to do something a little bit different. Rather than giving you a new episode, we went back through our interviews this year and picked some of our favorite moments and guests. Everything you hear today was released earlier this year, but we hope to share some of our thoughts on the episode. And if you haven't already listened, maybe it'll pique your curiosity enough that you want to go back and listen to the whole thing. So because Dean is always in the room when we do our interviews, although behind the camera, and I do mention you quite a bit, I asked him to take a seat and host with me. And because Dean, you put together the episodes, really, you listen to them probably more than anybody.
That's true.
you actually, for this episode, you went through and you picked the clips that we're going to go through. So what were you looking for when you did that?
So a lot of the episodes we do, some of the titles might seem a little obscure. So the goal was to kind of find some of these highlights of when certain programs of different organizations are doing. For example, the one we're going to be leading into, the G9, where they talk about different MCOM, they talk about different locations. So stuff like that, the gold medalist, other episodes where I think there's just some highlights that I like to pull out. So that was the goal, is to find some of the best clips from good episodes and hopefully make people want to listen to those episodes a little bit more.
Yeah, I think we ended up picking some of my favorite interviews for sure. Some that were a little bit more fun than some of maybe the other topics we've covered. So like you said, we're starting with our G9 interview. And when we recorded this one, we were actually on location at the Crown Coliseum in Fayetteville. And it was the AUSA Warfighter. And so we had Lieutenant General Kevin Vereen and Miss D. Geis, and they are from Army G9. And they talked about some of the priorities of housing and soldier well-being.
Let's take a look at the clip.
You know, what we do know is that there is absolutely a desire to want to have quality infrastructure. You know, where our soldiers work, you know, where they live and where they play, because we do have the morale, welfare, and recreation requirements as well. Those are all important. And it is not only a retention, you know, tool, but it's also a recruiting tool. And so when you think about some of the larger portions of the desires of our, you know, population of soldiers and families, it really centers around having quality infrastructure. I can't say enough about spouse employment, and LD is going to talk about that. But you know, we know that, you know, soldiers enlist to join the Army, but they also acquire families along the way. And so in order for us to be able to keep them and have them, you know, knowing that we're going to look after their needs, spouse employment is absolutely critical to that. Now, when I came in the Army, a lot of our spouses did not necessarily work. I mean, but, you know, times have changed, and we know that our spouses have careers. And so it's important that we do everything we can to ensure that we have employment that's available, that meets the level of that and expectation that our spouses want. And in some cases that our jobs that we select, that we try to find for our spouses, are transferable as well, because we know that our soldiers and families PCS as well.
Yeah.
So that's important.
I feel all of that, right. Especially with the spouse employment. So Ms. Geis, several years ago, our Army leaders stood up the Quality of Life Task Force. What was the intent, and can you give us an update on what has happened with the Quality of Life Task Force?
Yes, of course. So when General McConville came in as the Chief of Staff of the Army, his transition team went out to look at what are the struggles that are happening in the Army, and there was no surprise what those struggles were: housing, healthcare, childcare, spouse employment, and PCS moves. So there was a task force stood up. It is still alive and well today, and we've actually added lines of effort based on specified guidance from the Secretary of the Army, and we have a very large village. We have all of those lines of effort. We have participants from the Headquarters Department of the Army, including our Secretariat, down into the garrisons. We have very specific task lists that we follow to fix at the guidance of the Secretary and the Chief, and then of course our senior leaders like General Vereen in the Pentagon. I think it is too numerous to mention, but I will tell you, quality of life, army.mil/quality of life, and you can see some of those significant changes that we've made. We got the easy stuff out of the way first, and now we're working on the hard things. And the hard things look like big Army policy, big money, OSD policy or legislation. But there is a lot of accomplishment in that space, and certainly more to come.
So that was, for me, a really good interview, just because I utilize so many of the resources that they were talking about, or I have in my past, especially, you know, when you're talking about childcare and being a spouse and using, you know, spouse priority placement and whatnot when we move. So that was a really interesting episode for me. But we have so many soldiers throughout the Army who have had multiple MOSs, and we spoke to an EOD soldier earlier this year who is an aide. No, he's an enlisted aide right now, and he was also on CHOPT, which was really interesting.
Right.
And you were, I mean, what were your thoughts on that episode?
Well, he was also EOD, so this this was one of those, he had so many different MOSs, and a lot of people, you know, that have been in the military, they think when you first join that that's where your job's going to be. But there's so many different other avenues that you can go. So it was just, it was cool to hear about how he got in the EOD, how he was able to go to do all these multiple things. And a lot of it was basically, spoiler alert, it was by email is how he found out a lot of these.
Yeah.
But it was just, it was cool to see what he thought. And you actually were able to talk to him. And I think at one point you said that you saw the episode in advance.
I did.
And that's how I found out about it after we were already scheduling. I was like, what?
Yeah, when we were just flipping through the channels one evening and came across, I don't know what, I forget what it was called at this point, but it was like military, DOD, something like that. And it was the Army guys that were on. And I said, this cannot be new because I have not heard anything about it. Nobody's mentioned it. And so I thought it was something that had happened years ago. And then it was like literally the next day I came into work and my email had all of the stuff about the salute. I wish I could remember what it was called, but
we'll call it Salute to Service.
Yeah. EOD CHOPT. CHOPT edition. Anyways, so yeah, I just kind of randomly saw it, and I was excited to that one of these soldiers we were actually able to get to talk to. So
yeah, so let's take a look at that clip.
So I like to cook. I wasn't cooking at the level I am now. I really got into it when I was at Fort Riley, Kansas, the first time. I was down there, started getting into barbecue or smoking meat, and some way somehow I got linked up with two incredible barbecue teachers, I guess you could say, a Buddy and Bobby Cox. And they had their restaurant, Cox Brothers Barbecue, down there. They've got a couple restaurants now, but absolutely incredible people. And they taught me everything that I know about smoking meat, and really got me on the path to looking at a higher form of cooking and started really getting into it at that point. And then at that point, when I was on a recruiting duty, everybody knows they get those random solicitation emails every once in a while, like, hey, join Special Forces or look into civil affairs. Well, I got one that said, hey, you want to go to culinary school? Well, yeah, why not? So I submitted my packet. About a year later, I heard back saying, hey, you got accepted. So I went through culinary school with Army through the basic and advanced culinary, which if anybody ever has a chance to go to advanced culinary school, whoo, that is something else.
How awesome. I mean, did people think you were a good cook? Like, I mean, when they ate your food?
I mean, good, palatable.
Okay. I feel like it has worked out. Going on CHOPT and with those ingredients that they randomly give you and being able to put something together that's edible. That's pretty awesome.
Right?
So let's talk about CHOPT. You were the Army champion, and you competed against three other Army chefs for that title, and then went on to the finale where you worked with chefs from the Navy, Air Force, and Marines. So how did this happen, and how did you find yourself on CHOPT?
So, crazy story. You remember those solicitation emails I told you about?
Yes.
Well, it happened again. So I got the solicitation email. I kind of talked to some of my friends about it, some really, really good coworkers that I really bounce my ideas off of and just have supported me, and I've supported them through their careers. Lieutenant Dalton Stone, Lieutenant Sean Bowen, Sergeant Danny Somerville, great individuals. I hope they just absolutely skyrocketing their careers, great leaders in and of themselves. And then I brought it up to my wife, and I was like, you know, I don't want to do this. I'm not going to do it. She's like, you're going to do it. So I did it, you know, household six rules all. And some way, somehow, once again, they said, hey, you're going to be on Chopped. And that's where the rubber hit the road.
Yeah. How amazing. What was that experience like?
Oh, it was something else. You know, as soon as you set foot on the stage, it really is a stage. You walk into this big warehouse and you're just looking around like, this is not a kitchen at all. Walk through the doors, and there's a beautiful kitchen with all these camera guys, about 30 people with cameras. You see the judges sitting up there, and you're just like, oh God, they're gonna destroy
tear me apart.
Me. Yeah. And it's surreal to think that you've been watching this for however many years, and all of a sudden now you're in the kitchen with the burners going on, you know, rear end, kick butt, and you can't hear anything outside of just chop, 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 time.
I mean, yeah. It just is. I maybe this is something you had imagined, but was it? I mean, did you ever think, you know, by joining the Army, you would find yourself on a Food Network TV show?
Absolutely not. Nope, no way.
So since we started this podcast, I've had an opportunity. I've talked to a Miss America contestant who had worked basically her entire life to get to this goal of being able to compete in Miss America. And I've talked to some of the very best of our Force Comm soldiers. But this year I got to talk to my first Olympian and gold medalist, which was, it was really cool. And talked about Amber English. Yep. She talked about her experience going to her first Olympics, which was in Tokyo, the peak of COVID, and what that was like. And we had seen all over like social media that they were sleeping on cardboard boxes. At least that's what they made out the beds to look like. So we got to talk to her about that. She was great.
And I think at one point there was a highlight, like you'd think a gold medalist winner would have her gold medal with her. So what happened with that?
So we're talking and I'm like, oh, it'd be great to see your medal. And she's like, you know, I thought about that too. I knew you were going to ask. So she leaves and goes and gets it and comes back and is like, I've never opened my safe that quickly. And I'm like, you had that in a safe that you unlocked?
That's crazy.
It was record time. It was awesome. So here's our conversation with her.
Yeah, you know, I had a coach, and I was just surrounded by a team of people that wanted to see us do well. And I think that's important, having good, positive training environments and being able to buckle down and get it done. We really leaned on our coaches to kind of get us through that. And they saw, you know, the good, bad, and the ugly, that's for sure, getting ready for this. So it was definitely, it took a team for us to get where we needed to be.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think, you know, having a squad, being with people who are supporting the same thing that you do is mm-hmm. is important. Yep. Do you have your medal around you?
I don't. I was just literally thinking, you read my mind. I was like, I could go run and get it real quick if you want me to.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that was the fastest I have ever opened my gun safe in my entire life.
Oh, man.
There it is.
That's awesome. Yeah. Is it heavy?
It is. It actually is pretty heavy, but this is the traditional face of all Summer Olympic medals.
Okay.
Single Summer Olympic medal, that's the goddess of victory. And then the back side, the host country gets to design the back. So it says Tokyo 2020.
How awesome.
And then they say the hardest thing to replicate is actually the ribbon. So this one's kind of inlaid on the inside, but yeah.
Awesome.
There it is. So hardest thing I've ever worked for.
I bet. And so you keep it in your gun safe?
I do. Yep, I do.
That was magic for you to open it that quickly.
Yeah, that was very fast. I was like, please work, please work.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thank you for showing it to us.
So that was crazy. And then after that, we were able to speak to the Golden Knights. And I remember that was pretty cool. You got to talk to them. I mean, what did you think about talking to those guys?
I mean, I just thought going into it would be an interesting conversation because you talk about skydiving and you talk about also being in the Army. Yeah. And the fact that you can take something that you are so passionate about and transfer that into a career in the Army is pretty incredible. And I think they shared their thoughts on that as well. And just what it takes for them to be able to continue to do this. And the fact that this is not something that you do for 3 years. Like, once they've put in the time to train you and you've gotten to a certain point, the fact that you could spend your entire career in the Army doing that is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it was another one where we were able to see some of the video from them actually using GoPros, and actually one, I think the initial clip was they landed on an aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
So I was able to splice in some of that stuff. So it was cool to be able to see what they've done. We went from EOD to gold medalist to I think they're pulling people off the streets as well as they're grabbing other people inside of other MOSs. So that's another one where you can cross level and you win the Golden Knights. And so,
right.
I mean, that was pretty awesome to see these guys in action. But
well, and I think when we got the footage that they gave us to use in the video, it's incredible what they are able to capture with GoPros, and the fact that they're not necessarily trained to do that. It's something that on the job training really helps them get to that point. Right.
Well, it's just, I'm thinking about it. It's like, yeah, that's not a video that you could watch and be like, oh, go to ALMS or go online to and do some of your online annual training about skydiving.
Right. And we talked about it even in the episode where, you know, in our jobs, we go out and we take pictures all of the time. Uh-huh. Our pictures are nowhere near the level that, I mean, also our subjects are not.
Yeah.
We're not taking the same type of picture.
That's part of it.
Maybe, but their stuff is incredible. So let's go to the clip and you guys can see some of that. I know, Zach, you've been on the team for a year and Matt for 3 years. So can you talk about maybe one of your most memorable experiences on the team? And Zach, I'll go to you first.
Sure. So I've jumped joint demonstrations with the Golden Knights before, but as far as being on the team, my most memorable one would probably be this recent trip that we did to California. We went to Southern California area, so we got to jump in San Diego onto an aircraft carrier.
Nice.
And then after that, we jumped into the San Diego Padres. Then went up to Huntington Beach and jumped into Huntington Beach with a massive crowd.
Wow.
The skydiving aspect is a lot of fun, but I think we get the most fun once we actually get on the ground. We interact with the people, talk to them, tell them our stories, they tell us theirs, and we get to, you know, learn about one another. I think that's the funnest part.
You know, though, talking to people is not for everybody. So I find it interesting that, you know, you guys come onto this team and you can actually go out and represent the Army and talk to people, and you're good with that. I mean,
that's part of the selection process. I mean, we have a very robust selection process. It's 8 to 12 weeks long.
Oh, wow.
And we look at every single aspect that you possibly can, because we travel with each other. How many days of the year? Like,
they're on the road at least 220 plus days a year,
so
consistently.
We want to make sure that you're a good teammate. We trust you. Good work ethic. Make sure you can talk to people, be polite, interact. Like, if you just sit there and don't say anything, I mean, we need you to talk to people, engage. So we look at every possible aspect, and that's the people that we want to come to the team. We want to build upon that, have what we have as a foundation, and then expand the team and make it better than what it was before.
So, yeah, that was a fun group to talk to. It was cool to see some of their jumps, the locations that they did, and just talk about some of their experiences.
Yeah. So, like I said before, we've had, in the last 3 years, we've had a number of guests on the podcast and people throughout ForceCom. But one of those that is really always, I love talking to him. He was such a great person. I mean, he is a great person. But that was our Command Sergeant Major Todd Sims. And he just recently retired. We were lucky enough, right before his actual retirement ceremony, we got to sit down and talk with him about his last 35 years in the military. And it's incredible what he was able to accomplish and the impact that he left on soldiers.
Yeah, that was awesome. Let's take a look at that clip.
So I really, after having the ability to travel to every camp, post, and station that the Forces Command has, so I'm really looking forward to the future is where we align units with where they live, their barracks. You know, there's a lot of work we still got to do with that. Then the infrastructure of our installations. I know MCOM's looking at it real hard. I know Forces Command's looking at it real hard. So is the Department of Army.
Yeah.
But we have to upgrade the facilities where our soldiers work. I know it's going to come, but the things that I look forward to is when you know, I had the same motor pool in the 101st in 1993. It's still there. Same building, but then I think of Fort Hood. They have the most modern tank in the Army as well, and they can't even work on it inside the building. They have to work on underneath an awning at the backside of the motor pool.
Oh, wow.
So I'm looking forward to how the collective as the Department of Army, Forces Command, and MCOM and AMC tackle that and build a better infrastructure for our camps, posts, and stations. That's long term.
Sure.
But, you know, I'll be happy one day to go walk on an installation and see something that's like, this is awesome. And we know we're taking care of our soldiers.
Absolutely. So you talked about this a little bit before, but you're transitioning out of the Army as the top enlisted soldier in Forscom. Is this something that, did you ever think that you would make it this far, 35 years? Was this something you had ever contemplated?
No, I jokingly always, I just wanted to be a first sergeant. And I got to do that, and you know, two times in combat in garrison. And it pinched me. I thought I was done, you know. And you know, and they told me I made the list. I'm like, what list are you talking about? The school list to go to Sergeant Major's Academy. I was like, okay. Then it's kind of frustrated because I graduated the academy and I was an ops sergeant major. I was an ops sergeant major for 26 months, and this was pre-CSL. Then Command Sergeant Major Frank Grippy, Big Frank, punched me in the chest, said, "You're taking the battalion next week." I'm like, oh, yes. But, you know, doing that, then getting CSL selected for another battalion and then two brigades, NTC, you know, I'm at that point. I'm telling, you know, we bought a house in Washington State. And then, you know, my wife's like, "Yeah, we got this house. You know, we're gonna retire and everything." So, yeah, I'm going to retire. But, you know, the opportunity kept coming, you know, especially when I interviewed and got hired for the 101st. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And then I went to the retirement seminar when I was in the 101st because I thought I was retiring. And it was so funny. The SMA Daily was the SMA at the time, but he was at the same class with me. And he's like, "Sims, why are you here?" I was like, "Because you told me to be here." Because you have to prepare, you know, one year out or 2 years, whenever the cycle is where you can get to go to the class. And that next week I got hired for First Army. I'm like, wow. Then about 15 months into that job, I start thinking transition again. And then this opportunity, General Garrett gave me a call, interviewed, and then called me back a couple of days later. Now I'm the Forscom Sergeant Major.
Yeah.
So it's really all about timing, and it's about, you know, it's about, do you have a connection with the GO? I mean, it's been awestruck because you know, I thought as a battalion operations sergeant major, I was at that point where I said, I think I'm going to retire. And then, you know, It took Big Frank Grippy to punch me, you know, give me a little sock on the chest, say, "Hey, you're taking that battalion." it kind of motivated me to keep going.
How was that for your family? I mean, we talk a lot about soldier readiness, but families are a huge part of our readiness. So how was that?
I think at that point, you know, Sean was a little bit younger. Shelby had graduated high school, and then, of course, she joined the Army. But, you know, all the moving aside, it's I think the discussions between myself and my wife was like, you know, if you want to keep doing this, I'm willing to follow you wherever you want to go. And she says, "You're going to go all the way to the top if you're going to continue to do this." And you know, I think Forscom is a great way to end a great career.
Yeah.
But it's the impacts on the family. I think since the kids are a little bit older, you know, it was more of impact during combat. So all those deployments, back and forth deployments, that was rougher because they don't know, is Dad gonna come home?
Sure.
And then I came back from Iraq to go to the academy, and my son, I came back on his birthday, so we didn't tell him I was coming back, and so I had a friend pick me up and took me to the house, and I knocked on the door, and she's like, "Sean, go get the door," and he actually opened the door and he looked at me, and he turned around and looked at his mom. Is he really here? is he going back?
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, that's those were the hardest times. But I think once I started on the train of Command Sergeant Major, you know, they backed me. My son graduated high school at Fort Carson, so then he went straight off to college. So I think is it rough? Yes, it's rough, but I think that the support that my wife gave me is second to none. And you'll get to see me cry on Friday, but next Friday. But I think if it wasn't for her in my corner, and like, so, you know, I will follow you anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's just been a phenomenal.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah, after seeing Sergeant Major Sims retire, that was it was exciting, even though, you know, the next chapter of his life is going to be exciting for him. It was sad to see him go.
Yeah.
We also got to talk to then Forces Command General Andrew Pappas and talk about his vision and ForceCom and all the troops.
Yeah. And that episode was actually, I think it was probably 6 months or so into him being our ForceCom commander. So prior to Sergeant Major Sims' retirement. And what was awesome about that episode is that they have so much history together, being at the 101st, and you know, General Pappas being the commanding general, Sergeant Major Sims being the division sergeant major, and just being able to listen to them both talk, and of course General Pappas's vision for ForceCom. So let's go ahead and look at that clip.
When I first came into command for Battalion Brigade, even at division, I used to act, you know, 2005 taking Battalion. I used to say, our future is written. You know, I thought it was brilliant, but it just is. Because I could tell you where we were going, the time horizon we're going. We could study the physical terrain of that location. You could actually study the human terrain.
Yeah.
Every tribal leader. And we've had a database on that. The future fight is not that predictable. And we have to be prepared. You have to be ready. And ready for what? Ready for so much more. And we're adjusting in the time frame that we had our fight, you know, the 20 years of continuous conflict, the brigade became the center of gravity. We rotated brigades for it. They're brigades fights. We enhanced the brigade capability to be a unilateral entity that could fight, you know, plan, coordinate, execute, AAR, and prepare for the next fight unilaterally. The large-scale combat operations by scope and scale, we're elevating that up. The principal tactical fighting formation is going to be the division. That's part of the change. We have to change the scope, scale, and depth of the fight and the complexity of it. So as we're moving forward, we're talking about the winning the first fight at the edge of the bayonet. We also have to elevate up so that our battalions, our brigades can start synchronizing all the warfighting functions in a multi-domain fight to include cyber and space. Not resident capabilities at that echelon yet, because they have to be able to inform at the division level. If that's your main fighting function, we have to change a little bit of structure, bring capability in and expertise, but then also be able to fight the division so that they can set the conditions for the lower echelon maneuver elements. And the division's not alone, because you have a joint task force and a theater army that are going to be setting the conditions for the division in the Corps. In order to do that, there's a complexity there and a level of maturity of the leadership in order to synchronize that. We've got to work to that level, and that's the path we're on. So when we talk about winning the first fight, it's getting that echelons of competency at the brigade and the division. It's predictability, identifying transitions, plans in advance. We don't high-five after the first battle, because guess what? There's still 59 more minutes of this game to go.
So as we wrap up the end of the year, I thought it was fitting that, and I know we talked about this, that we discuss a podcast that we did last year about goal setting. And I think this is a good time of year to bring that full circle. And I have a lot of conversations and interviews and episodes that I really have enjoyed. But this one sort of stuck out to me because Drew, who we spoke with, he made it seem so easy. Like, this goal setting and meeting your goals was something that anybody could do. And I thought it was a really good conversation. He had some really great tips and advice on how to do that. So this episode was with Drew Hammond, and he is the 44th Medical Brigade H2F director. And we talked about setting goals in the new year.
It's a great question. And I think the fitness industry would pay you millions of dollars if you could definitively answer that. One trick that I have used in the past, and that I have used with athletes that I've coached, is to take advantage of the momentum of the new year to put something on the calendar that might be a couple of months down the road. So you know, you hear a lot of people, for example, say, oh, I'm going to train for 5K or whatever. And the momentum is high January 1st.
Sure.
So use that to get online and schedule something. And once that's on the books, then get into the gym, you know, get on the treadmill or whatever the goal might be, and just let that kind of carry itself into the date. And what I have found when that is done well is that not only do you check that box of New Year's resolution, but you also kind of establish a habit that tends to last a little bit longer than just joining a gym on January 1st.
Along with everybody else mm-hmm. who has that same idea. So I think, and you sort of hit on it a little bit, but starting one aspect of starting anything is creating that new routine, whether it be, you know, bringing your lunch to work every day and not getting food out, or going to the gym 5 days a week, whatever it is, changing your routine is hard. What are some of the things we can do to help us adopt changes in our routine that support our goals?
Man, well, I, you know, it's one of those things where I think you could have a conversation about intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation, which I think is important. And we've seen that if you're intrinsically motivated to do something, you obviously tend to stick to it a little bit longer. Now, how to intrinsically motivate people is a whole separate conversation. But different tips and strategies. I mean, I think have an honest conversation with yourself about where the barriers are to get from where you're at to where you want to be. So, you know, meal prep is a popular one. And if some of the hurdles are time, you know, there's a lot of resources out there for recipes that are relatively quick.
Yeah.
You know, getting to the grocery store, if that's a challenge, then maybe take a look at your weekend or the afternoons that you do have available and tweak your schedule a little bit. I think all too often people fall into this trap of thinking that, you know, just because the way things are right now is the way things are always going to be. And I think if you really give an honest assessment of, like I mentioned, your schedule, your commitments, you can probably shuffle those things around a little bit more than you think. And if it comes to establishing a new habit or introducing any kind of new behavior, kind of by definition, that requires you to make room for some things.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, I realize that's sort of a vague politically correct answer, but like, I think you do have to find ways of falling in love with the process and not just the outcome, because if the outcome were easy, you probably would have done it a long time ago.
Absolutely. I heard once that if you can stick to something for 21 days, then it will really help with your routine. Did I just make that up?
I don't know. That's one of those things where it's like, you know, one resource is 21 days, another resource is probably 17.
Yeah.
I would think that if you do it for 21 days, yeah, you probably keep doing it.
Sure.
But again, I think it is. Yeah, you have to set yourself up for small wins as opposed to just pushing towards one big one, because that becomes challenging.
Welcome back. So we hope you enjoyed this year's review, wrap up, I was calling it prior to the episode. Hope you listened to the full episodes, the year in review that we did last year. I hope that you're able to pull some of the things from that last year and utilize them for this year. I think the main things of what Drew was saying is basically get started, come up with plans that are easy to utilize and able to adapt, and just get going.
Yeah. And to add to that, we have in some of our older episodes, we have a mindfulness episode where, I mean, we don't recommend you listen to it while you're driving.
It's calming.
And we are about to go into a very busy time of the year, stressful. So I think that there are a lot of episodes that we have done that, you know, spiritual readiness or the mindfulness or goal setting. There are a lot of things that we have talked about over the last 3 years that, you know, if there's something specific that you're looking for, you could probably find it. And so we, like Dean said, I encourage you to go back and take a look at some of those older episodes.
Yep. So as you said, we do multiple platforms. The reason why we do YouTube is for people that are seated at desks. Sometimes they want to be able to actually watch the video as you're seeing today. If you're not seeing us, you're probably listening to it on the other platforms that we use. What are those?
It's every major podcast platform. Spotify, Apple,
Anchor,
Stitcher, all of them.
Yeah. E-bombs world. It's an old one.
We're not on Reddit or LinkedIn.
Yeah. No, but almost everything else.
Yeah.
If you can't find it, you should be able to just search for the ForceCom Frontline.
Absolutely.
On YouTube, on Anchor, Like I said, I think that one searches the multiple ones through
Spotify.
Apple and stuff. Spotify.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so I think the other thing that I want to make sure we mention is we want feedback. The only way that we are going to make this podcast any better is if we get feedback from our listeners. So if you have an idea for an episode, if you have a suggestion on how we can make things better, we want to hear from you. So shoot us a message, and you can either, I mean, you could shoot it on social media. You could send us a message, and we'll have our social media manager make sure he gets us those.
He's behind the camera right now.
Or you can send one to forcecompao@gmail.com. And thanks for listening. Thanks for the support throughout the year. And we'll see you next time on The Frontline.